Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Bravo Happy Hour. I'm your host, Megan O'Donnell. Grab yourself a drink and join me every Tuesday and Friday to talk all about Bravo TV. On Tuesdays, I report on all the latest news stories happening in the off-screen lives of our favorite Bravo celebrities. And Friday bonus episodes range from one season wonder recaps, Bravo celebrity product reviews, book club discussions, very random deep dives, and so much more. Sit back, grab your drink, and enjoy the show. Welcome to Bravo Happy Hour. I'm your host, Megan O'Donnell, and this is part 3 of my High Society Deep Dive, which is Tinsley Mortimer's show on the CW that came out in 2010, I think. I'm here with Bravo Happy Hour's international correspondent, Jasper. Welcome back to the show.
Hello again.
So, High Society, just the greatest show. I've had so many people in my DMs being like, I had no idea this show existed. Thank you so much. I'm like, you are so welcome.
Yeah, it's a great show.
And I didn't watch it when it was out originally. I think I watched it like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years ago, but it was one of those things that like I watched just like for no reason and didn't really retain it. But this is the first time I'm kind of watching it with a keen eye.
No, I've seen it. I think I saw it back then, and then obviously through the years I watched it now and then again when there was a dry spell of reality TV.
It's kind of one of those that you kind of always can go back to. Like for me, I feel that way about Real Housewives of New Jersey season 1. If I'm ever having like a really bad day, I'm like, just throw that on. I know I'll be happy. It's an old, a trusty old television show. So we start this recap on episode 4, which is called Page 6. It starts off with Tinsley getting ready to go to the opera. She's getting her signature curls, which have been a topic of conversation in the Real Housewives of New York, because when she started Roni, she was like trying to get a new vibe, a new way of dressing, and she's trying to like get her groove back, and she was like, I'm getting rid of my signature Tinsley curls. Which then you kind of see on the show, it's like she does kind of constantly rock that signature curl look. I think like Tinsley's biggest moment on Roni is when she was like at the Big Apple Circus crying in that like little circus girl outfit. Yeah.
In the clown makeup.
I'm so unhappy.
Her comeback to society.
Yeah, not the Garrow Sparrow fashion show. So she's getting ready for the opera. At this point, she's kind of talking about how she hasn't heard from Casimir since Dale's freak out at the event. And I think safe to say the two of them are over. I think if your mother acts like that, the man you're dating most likely will not be calling you back. Then we go over to Paul at his apartment, and we were talking about his apartment in the last episode, and it's on the Upper West Side, and okay. The apartment itself is all white, really boring, but full of like old wood furniture, which kind of gives me the feeling that this is probably like a family apartment that he is just squatting in, because
yeah, definitely,
it just looked like an old fancy rich person's place, not like a young dude in his, I don't know, how old do you think he is, like late 20s?
I thought he was in his mid-20s. Yeah, probably late-20s, but I thought something like mid-20s.
Age.
I feel like Tinsley was one of the oldest on the show.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay. Okay, so Tinsley was 35 on the show. Probably explains why Dale was like, I can't believe you're leaving this man. You're not going to be able to find love again. Jules was 27. This is good. All right.
Looks like 35 because of all the cigarettes and alcohol she abuses.
But besides the point, so we then go to Paul at his apartment. He's saying, like, I've been a stylist. I've worked at Vogue, details, paper. But, like, I took a back burner on my career because things have been really crazy lately. Like, that's not good when your partying is taking over your career. Or I say career in quotations. So he ends up calling Tinsley to see if she would want him to style her for the New York City Opera event. And it's funny because you can hear, like, Tinsley pick up the phone and she's like, yeah, I guess. Like, I guess you can style me. So she says, yeah.
I didn't know you were a stylist. Subtext.
Oh, 100%. And then we see him, like, eventually going to some showrooms. And the lady was like, oh, so, like, are you pulling for anybody else? And he's like, actually, this is, like, my first time doing it. And then he's like, she's a bitch. She asked me questions. The only thing she says she wants is a dress with a lot of color and that she's a sample size or size 2. This is also one of those shows that you don't really see people eating. A lot of shows you don't see people eating, but this one, they don't even go to restaurants. They just are at bars or someone's hotel room apartment.
So true, but then we get this one shot, I don't know what episode it is, outside the hotel room, all those trays lined up from room service. So they must have eaten when the camera was off.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that in one of our recaps where it was like, you could tell Jules calls room service 15 times a day to be like, can you bring up a bowl of blueberries? 45 minutes later. Hi, can you guys bring up 2 hard-boiled eggs? Hi, can you bring up an iced coffee? It's like, no, just one order. One order. So... okay, they get off the phone call, whatever. Then he is sitting there and he gets a text from Guest of a Guest, which is like this gossipy website based in New York, which doesn't, I don't think, produce any articles anymore, which I was shocked about. And he was saying he gets this text that he supposedly vandalized Cleo's apartment building. So Cleo is Jules' friend. And he was like, I went to her apartment and saw these hideous wall sconces. And I just like started ripping them down.
Pulled a Ramona.
That is a Ramona to a T. Actually, he did it first. Actually, Ramona's probably been pulling sconces off walls for the last 40 years.
Yeah, but it's so true. I mean, maybe she watched High Society back then, or when they were in the Berkshires, she was on YouTube re-watching High Society and got inspired.
I would die for Ramona to like be on her iPad watching High Society in the fish room. Or no, she actually, what was it, the Moroccan room? They were like, everybody hates the Moroccan room. Nobody even remembers the Moroccan room. So the reporter ends up calling him, and reporter Carson is like, so like, tell us what you think. Like, what's your statement on this? And he's like, I'm dealing with it. And he seems like he's somewhat embarrassed by it, but it also seems like he doesn't care and has like no remorse or regard for property. We'll deal with how he deals with this eventually. But as much as he doesn't like that he's in the press, he still thinks he's fabulous that he's in the press, even though it's for another thing that is just a stain on his own reputation. Like, he thinks like the bad press is good press, but it's when it's only bad press, it's just not right. It's not good.
He probably doesn't like know the difference between good and bad press because he only gets bad press. Yeah. I mean, have you ever found, I mean, it's hard to find anything about those people, but have you ever found an article about him that was positive? I don't think so.
No, I haven't. And even like in the past, like the past articles about him all pretty much stopped in around 2013. Like, there hasn't really been anything since then. So we will be doing a Where Are They Now episode on these people.
It's going to be 5 minutes because we can't find
anything. I know. It's been pretty hard trying to track people down, but I have had a couple of really amazing sleuths on the internet who listen to this show who have sent me Paul's Instagram, but I'm not going to follow him because I made that huge mistake with Jules. Everybody heard the reality check. And now she's private because even Anna, who helps me with editing and stuff, she went onto her account and was like, she's private now. I'm like, I think we've created a monster from this show. The thousands of people who listened to that last episode.
She's not private anymore. I just went on it again. Maybe she just did it for a little bit. Maybe after, or just for the weekend or whatever because of the recap. But I just went on it now. No, she's not private anymore.
Little does she know, I plan to make 4 more episodes of this recap. So you know what that's like? I don't know, 50,000 more downloads. So good luck, honey. I have to make a Finsta so I can follow her. But I will say, like, Anna, who helps me with everything, she's been sending me updates. And honestly, Jules has new face, new nose, big old titties, a six-pack. Like, she's doing very well physically, but I don't think mentally she's okay based on the public, private, blocking Instagram persona that she's putting out towards me right now.
I'm still waiting to be accepted on Deborah Denise Trachtenberg's Instagram.
Yeah,
she's private, and I wanted to follow her months ago, and I'm still waiting.
Yeah, I don't know if Deborah will accept your friend request at this point, which I think it's hard. Like, I wish I could be accepted by them, you know. But I think at this point,
you want to be in high society.
Yeah, I want to be in high society. It's true. I might be 11 years too late, but I do think I could potentially be a great fit on this cast. So we end up moving to Devorah, who's also going to the opera gala, and she's at Maggie Norris's studio. Love Maggie Norris, who is a bootleg Diane Keaton, wearing like the little vest and like the big puffy sleeves. And again, I love people talking about designers as if she's going to, you know, Gianni Versace's atelier. Like, it's going to Maggie Norris's studio. Everybody knows her. And
I need to Google her. I was like, yeah, maybe a local designer.
Haven't
heard. Famous in New York society, probably. Yeah, but we haven't heard of her in Europe.
Yeah, no, she's no Samantha Thavassa.
Thavassana.
Thavassana. So Devorah ends up trying on all these things. She tries on this $25,000 corset and this $12,000 skirt, which just completely washes her out. Devorah has like a beautiful figure, beautiful coloring. She's Venezuelan. And I mean, this horrible fake blonde hair, but that's besides the point. But she puts on this like pale pink or champagne colored corset skirt thing, and it just washes her out. And everybody is like, oh my God. Oh my God, like a gaggle of gay guys being like, you look sublime. Oh my God.
Look like a ghost, yeah.
And whatever, she's really excited. And this did give me such Alex McCord vibes when she wore that feed corset. And they were like, we're by. I think she actually borrowed the feed corset. I don't think she owned it. Actually, or maybe Simon bought it for her. He was like, it's $25,000. Send your kids to college with that money. Please stop buying shit like that. So at this, one of her friends asks her, is Tinsley coming to the event? And she's like, yeah, she is. I built Tinsley. I styled her hair. Like, I totally gave her a new look.
So Deborah Denise is to blame for the curls then.
He made the Tinsley curl a thing.
According to Deborah Denise herself. But I also like how she also said, like, when she was on her way to, I want to call her Chuck Norris, Maggie Norris's studio.
Chuck Norris's wife, Maggie.
Right? In her voiceover, she was like, only like a few selected people get to shut down the showroom. It's like, well, this is a tiny, tiny apartment showroom. This is not a showroom. And I'm more or less, yeah, you must be a superstar to shut down a showroom.
Also, you know, it's Maggie Norris. It's not as if she has like a storefront on Madison Avenue and she shuts the store down, which we'll eventually see. Also, you're on a television show. Maggie Norris has gotten so much press from this here show 10 years after the fact. So, like, I think Maggie's probably like, you know what? I can give Devorah 45 minutes of a quote-unquote shutdown showroom, and I think it'll be fine. Like I've worked at so many different fashion places, and like, when we were at Stella McCartney, we'd have, like, one dirtbag influencer come in, and everyone would be like, shut the showroom down! And the girl would come in for, like, 45 minutes, try on two things, and just leave. And it's like, all right. The showroom was shut down, now we are back open. But...
and we helped to build Maggie Norris.
Yeah. We are single-handedly responsible for Maggie Norris's international success. You're welcome, Maggie. So from there we go to Dale at the genealogist, which this is another anti-Germany section of the podcast. Any other German listeners, I'm sorry in advance for the aggressive xenophobia from Dale. So she is bringing in the book. It reminds me of when Danielle brought out Cop Without a Badge at the dinner. She was like, let's talk about the book. So she's holding up the book, and the book is fully blurred, so you can't even find out what book it was.
Maybe it is Cop Without a Badge, because that's why they blurred it out, because they didn't get any other book, and that book is, was back then, the prop.
That is, like, the biggest prop, one of the biggest props in Bravo history, and I think I'm gonna buy it, actually. It's, like, $25 on Amazon, so it's one of those things where I'm like, you gotta figure out if you really need that, Megan. But I think eventually I'll want to
find it at a public library.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be at the public library. I should actually call my local library. Do you guys have Cop Without a Badge starring Beverly? So she goes to this genealogist and basically saying, you know, what kind of family is Casimir from? I know a lot of royal families during that time were Nazis. And she just goes to him. She was like, is my daughter dating someone from a Nazi background? Again, Dale, not all Germans were Nazis. A crazy concept you might not have realized or learned in school. But
I mean, it is a fair question somehow. But yeah, not every German was a Nazi.
And the genealogist ends up confirming that Casimir's granduncle, Heinrich, was never... Yeah, how do you say it?
Heinrich.
I just sound like I have, like, something stuck in my throat. It took me like 3 months to say your name correctly. At one night we were like out and we had like 12 glasses of wine. You were like, I hate to say it, but you've been saying my name wrong the whole time. I'm like, oh, okay. Thanks for telling me a little late, but I'll take it. So thank God, not a Nazi. He confirmed to Dale that you're able to fight for your country during that time and not be a Nazi. Phew, wipe the sweat off my forehead. I was so nervous. The show was going to take a Nazi turn. We didn't not expect that. Also, it's funny because at this point, Dale, like, I mean, of course, like, you don't know, always know if production is actually happening in chronological order, but it's like, Dale, after you chased him out of an event, I don't think you need to worry about him and Tins still being boyfriend, girlfriend. Like, you ruined that. Nazi or not Nazi. Like, you don't even need to confirm at that point because they are done so.
But I'm also like, of course, she's happy that he isn't a Nazi, but also she's really surprised that he isn't a Nazi, or like from a Nazi family. But then she also is like, he has no crown, no jewels, no land. It's like, so she still is worried about him and is actually implying that he is not a real prince. I was like, no, you fucking idiot. Everyone, like in European royalty, you don't have to be a king so your kids are prince and princesses. I don't know what lord, lady, whatever, all the kids over here are called prince. They all have the title prince. So it's not like his parents have to be king and queen. And it's like, Dale, you should know that. You're an old woman from old money and pretend like you have really good education. So you shouldn't be surprised how or not know how royalty works in Europe.
I mean, I definitely didn't know that. But I'm not pretending I have a good education.
And you're not from a rich Southern family.
No, not yet. Maybe eventually. From the genealogist, we go to Paul shopping for pulls for Tinsley for the event. He goes to Jill Stewart, and that's where he's talking with the stylist, being like, yeah, like, I'm dressing Tinsley Mortimer. She's like, everybody knows Tinsley. And he calls her a biatch because I guess she was, like, maybe passive-aggressive with him about dressing other people and whatever. So then he goes down to, like, a bunch of different other places, LaForce and Steven, Venacaba, Ellie Saab, and he, whatever, is picking out clothes for her. And then he goes to Shanghai Tang, which, again, another designer, probably wildly overpriced. And he finds a jacket with monkey hair, a black jacket with monkey hair. And he looks at it and he's like, now this is perfect for Tinsley. And, like, is fully serious. A non-ironic monkey hair jacket is what he pulls for Tinsley, who basically dresses like a wedding cake everywhere she goes, or like a third grader at their birthday party. And he's pretty confident about this. He has 3 hours to go to her apartment with these pulls. So he ends up going to the apartment with the monkey hair jacket that Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek would be wearing. And, like, I actually think she probably has worn something like that. So I'm going to try to find a side-by-side. It's frustrating because Google Images doesn't really give me all of the images that I need from this show. So I think I'm actually going to have to physically go back through YouTube and take screenshots myself, because as Anna was working to pull social things, I was finding so few images that I was like, oh, I guess, yeah, this was like 2010, before, like, picture of everything I could ever want to find from a Bravo show is just readily available for me. I'll do it, you guys. So he goes to her apartment with 3 hours left before the show. She looks absolutely shocked and is basically like, this fur looks actually like human hair and I won't wear it. And ends up calling someone else, and that person is like, like, comes over, like, has like a perfect, like, big little pink dress, and she's very happy. Paul is fuming. He's like walking around, like, his nose flaring up as if, like, he can't understand how she wouldn't want a monkey fur coat and a black gown when she literally only asked for color. Like, that was the only thing she asked for.
Yeah, she wanted long and color, and he brought her gray and black. And then also, like, he doesn't even know what a stylist is supposed to know. Like, at one of the shops, they're like, so what's her waist size? And he's like, I don't know. Like, well, you should know if you are a stylist. And then, of course, I mean, the guy, the other stylist who comes over, who's on speed dial, obviously, the dress was a Marquesa dress. Yet again.
Yet
surprise.
Again.
So clearly she's been a spokesmodel for Marquesa.
Yeah.
And of course it was all planned. I mean, by production, that he pretends to be a stylist and then that the real stylist comes, because with 3 hours to go, you don't suddenly, like, bring a new dress and jewelry and everything unplanned. You're like, oh yeah, I have this all lying around at my home because I'm Rachel Zoe. You know?
Yeah. Oh my God. Do you remember, like, Rachel Zoe's closet with all of the shoes on the floor? I just remember being like, please give me that closet.
Love that show.
I love that show too. I should do, like, a personal rewatch, not even for the podcast, just, like, watch it for fun. But season one was so good with Taylor and Brad. They were so bitchy. Yeah, I'm going to write that one down.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable. And while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from sugarcane, they've made the Superlight, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's allbirds.com.
Originals, put it in my fucking journal of shit. Maybe I'll attempt to recap one day. I need more time. Anyway, so she's happy. She's got the dress. And I will say, people don't respect Broadway, the opera, ballets, any sort of theater in New York anymore. I went to a Broadway play when Broadway existed in New York. And I remember seeing a gaggle of white women wearing UGG boots. These fucking performers work their entire lives to put on an amazing show. Put on some flats. You don't even have to wear heels. Put on some nice flats, a decent pair of pants. Maybe not, don't even, like, you can even wear potentially jeans if you're wearing a decent shoe and a nice top. But do not wear UGG boots to the theater. I just find it to be so offensive. Like, we as a society have gone so, just so fucking lazy. Even planes, like, the last time I flew, I just saw all these people, like, wearing full onesies. It's like, you're wearing a unicorn onesie, not only in public, but on a flight. Get a grip. Get a grip. Have some fucking self-respect.
Well, nowadays, it just put on a hazard suit.
Yeah, right.
Just to stay safe.
Like Naomi Campbell. So from there, we end up going to a scene with Jules and Cleo. They are going to a bar and they're in the elevator, and the elevator attendant is like this nice guy from Senegal. They're like, are there any hot guys up there? And he's like, yes, a lot of hot guys. He's like, what the fuck? They go to Hudson Terrace, which is really funny because that was a place I would go to my freshman year of college. Like, it's like a rite of passage. I don't think it's open anymore. But it was like this disgusting grungy nightclub. And I met a guy named Ari who was like in one of my business classes. He's like, I'm a promoter. Do you and your friends want to go to Hudson Terrace? It's like, of course. We'd love to. And like before we'd go in, he'd like pass out fake IDs to all of us. And one time he gave me a fake ID of an Asian girl named Grace Cho. And I got into a club in Manhattan with it.
Okay, Grace.
Shout out to Grace Cho, my soul sister. Looked nothing alike, truly nothing alike. I'm like, this kind of works. She's like 30 pounds lighter than me too. I'm like, I put on some pounds. Freshman, 30. So Jules and Cleo are sitting at this table. These cute guys come over and they're like flirting with them. You see a testimony of Jules being like, I really like guys who are like well-traveled and really smart and whatever. And one of the guys sits down and he's like, oh, I'm Remy. And she goes, oh, are you French? And he's like, no, I'm German. And then Jules puts her like two fingers above her, below her nose to do like a Hitler mustache. Does like the Heil Hitler fucking hand gesture and then just starts speaking. I mean, you tell me, was it gibberish German? We're like, what was that?
Nobody knows. Of course it was gibberish. You pretend to speak German. It's the same.
Yeah, whatever I would say is what she was saying. And right. So the guys look completely stunned. They're like, the fuck? What are you doing? And Cleo looks at her and she goes, oh my God, what are you doing? And Jules goes to her like looking incredulously like, it's Hitler. It's a Hitler impression. It's Yeah, Jules, we know it's a Hitler impression. We're not asking who you're doing. We're asking why are you doing it? Cleo then is like apologizing to the guys, obviously. I don't think they went home with them.
Oh, God, yeah. Again, German bashing on that show.
Yeah, and this actually might be the last of the German bashing, I believe. Within my research, I believe this is the last of it. So, yeah, this isn't a good scene. Cleo ends up, like, going up to her and is like, you're a mean girl. And Jules is like, if I'm a mean girl, then what are you? Cleo's like, well, not you. Like, I might be mean sometimes, but at least I'm not homophobic, racist, anti-Semitic. I don't know. The list kind of goes on, but I'll stop it there, just in case she's listening to this. Hey, Jules in Madrid, unblock me. Come on, Jules. We can be friends. Went to school with a lot of fucking assholes like you, who are equally as plastic surgeried up and trying to forget who they really are. Oh, God, I love rich assholes. So from there, we go to Paul at a wine bar by himself. He calls his mom to talk about his new press and was telling her about the wall sconces. He was like, we all were breaking them. And it's like, no, honey, this isn't a we thing. This was a you thing. He begs his mom for more money. She gives him a check for $2,000 and he pays it. And he doesn't feel bad about it. No remorse. Not surprising. And you know what? You create a monster when you allow your kid to just have zero responsibility. Like, your kid will never be like a respectful human being when you keep bailing them out. The mom is like,
no, yeah, but it's like, yeah, you create the monster, so yeah, you probably do have to pay for it. I think she's at the point where she's like, yeah, well, it's my fault, so I'm gonna pay for it anyways, so other people don't get too mad at him. I also like how he then says in his confessional or voiceover, like, yeah, he did the adult thing by paying for what he broke. But like, yeah, you did the adult thing by paying, but you asked your mother for the money. You didn't pay for it, your mother did.
Yeah, and like, he's making it seem like, yeah, he's so mature and an adult, but like, let's look at the problem itself. You literally were ripping down wall sconces. Like, that in itself is just so childish and unnecessary. Like, who hasn't been drunk? Who hasn't acted a fool? But to go and rip wall sconces in an apartment building, and I don't know what the sconces looked like. Hey, I've seen a bad sconce in my day, but never in a million years would that ever, like, be a thing to do. Just, like, wrecking property that is not yours just is so entitled and just delusional to think like, oh, this doesn't matter, I can fuck this up and have zero repercussions. Oh, $2,000 to fix it. Whatever, we all did it, it was all of our problem. Like, I just don't think, yeah. So I don't think Cleo would do that in her own apartment.
Cleo is really little anyways. She wouldn't even reach.
Yeah. So from there,
yeah,
we...
I think I might have broken a glass once or twice when I was drunk, but that not even on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, I will say one time I was really drunk years ago, and it was like after Halloween, and I saw a pumpkin on someone's like step and I smashed it. But I've like literally had like remorse dreams about it. Like, I felt like a fucking asshole. I was like, well, why did I need to do that? It was a moment. I was feeling like a dick, but you know, well, granted, I didn't like go back the next day and put $20 in cash in their mailbox saying I'm sorry. So maybe I'm just as bad as
maybe you should do it now. Yeah. Do the adult thing.
Yeah, I have to go back to fucking Portland, Maine and do it. It was an interstate. It was a different state that I was doing it. So I was just feeling like invincible. No one can find
probably
me.
A warrant out for you. Yeah. But you know how it is. Bad press is press as well.
It could be huge for the podcast. Pumpkin Smasher. Megan O'Donnell.
Megan Grace Chow Calderon.
Yeah. Oh my God, I could totally be in the Johnson & Johnson family, or at least say I am. So we go to Devorah getting ready for the opera. And this is one of my favorite things because she's talking about her date and she's like, he's the heir to Dominico Vaca. And like, I've Googled Dominico Vaca every way you could spell that. And I can't find a single thing about this quote unquote designer. Dominico Vaca. He's the son of Dominico Vaca. Who? Anyone?
Maybe that's Chuck Norris's. Others.
His custom suit mail maker.
Oh, and then yeah. Also clearly her date didn't even know where they were going because he wears a day suit.
Yeah.
It's like, I reckon production went down on the street and was like, hey, you, where are you coming from? I just finished work. Do you have time to go to the opening of the opera? Here's $20. And you'll be on TV.
He's like, my dad is actually Dominico Vaca. Do you guys know him? She's like, Dominico Vaca? What? And then this was one of my favorite parts on the YouTube version that I was watching. It had a Chiron coming on the bottom saying, high society airing on a special night on Saturday at 8:30. There is nothing more than a show going straight down the toilet than a Friday or Saturday night airing. At Saturday at 8:30 is when High Society is playing. So, like, even episode 4, they were like, nobody's watching this. And this is one of the worst group of people that have ever been on television. This was supposed to be, like, a Gossip Girl, but it actually has just turned into, like, the most entitled group of people sitting in various hotel rooms yelling at people and being atrocious. And then plus Tinsley and Dabney, who are just rays of sunshine, if you ask me. So we get to the opera. Tinsley ended up wearing the pink Marchesa dress. She said, these types of events make me feel really special. We see Devorah there, and she's talking to Carolina Herrera. She goes up to her, said she's my fashion icon, because they're both from Venezuela. And then it's funny because you see Devorah, like, introduce herself to Carolina Herrera, and then Tinsley comes in and is like, Carolina, hi. Carolina asks her, like, about her divorce and about what's going on in Tinsley's life, and was saying, you know, when things don't work out in relationships, it's better to just cut it off. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you're like, oh wow, like, Tinsley really does know everybody. Carolina Herrera, Karl Lagerfeld a couple episodes ago, like, she's actually in the know. She's not a Devorah.
And, like, yeah, Devorah goes up to Carolina Herrera and is like, oh, hi, yeah, I'm Deborah Denise Trachtenberg, but I'm from Venezuela as well. And, like, and Carolina is like, oh, yeah, hi, hola, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I think she says something in Spanish to her and doesn't care. And then, yeah, has this full-on pep talk with Tinsley and also offers her clothes and jewelry and is like, if you ever need to borrow anything, just come by and stuff. It's like, oh yeah, there's a little difference between Deborah Denise and Tinsley Mortimer.
Yeah, she was like, if you want to wear anything, just call Phoebe. It's like, who's Phoebe? Like, Phoebe? Like, the fact that, like, Phoebe doesn't even have a last name and Carolina and Tinsley are having that kind of conversation just shows, like, damn, Tinsley's in the know. So then we kind of see Tinsley, it's kind of funny because we're getting, like, above shots of the party. And so you're kind of, like, seeing Tinsley, like, scurry around Deborah Denise. And you see them kind of, like, kind of near each other. And then they end up crossing paths. And Devorah is like, hey, Tinsley, it's been a very, very long time. And Tinsley's like, yeah. He, like, walks away, and then you see Devorah, like, basically take out, like, a brown paper bag from her little purse, and, like, she's like, oh my god, Tinsley hates me. Tinsley won't even talk to me. She didn't even ask me how I'm doing.
Girl. She keeps insisting that they were really good friends, and it really looked like Tinsley didn't even know her.
Yeah, Tinsley was like, hey, Ari, what's up, girl? Like,
who are you?
Yeah. It definitely didn't seem like she gave a shit. And especially after, like, Devorah has been talking so much smack, why would Tinsley really give her a minute of her time? Actually, no, this actually was the catalyst to Devorah then talking a ton of crap about her to all the different press outlets. But it was just giving me like scorned ex-girlfriend vibes. Like Deborah like is unnecessarily upset with Tinsley, and Tinsley's like, again, I was on the cover of your magazine. And later in the season, Deborah is like, we went to breakfast together. We went to breakfast together. It's like, yeah, well, lots of girls. I mean, I've been to breakfast with a lot of random girls, just through friends of friends, whatever, business things. I'm not like saying, oh, this random socialite who I have been near is my friend. Like, no, I was contracted to work for her. Deborah, you worked for Tinsley when she agreed to be on your cover. That's it.
They probably didn't even go to breakfast. They were in the same line of Starbucks at some point.
Yeah. Deborah then makes a comment being like, oh, well, she's dating some prince, but she's as royal as Burger King. Good one.
That's a very rehearsed line.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's like Kyle Radswell, another royal, but like towards the end of her testimonials, you could tell she was like reading from a script, and she had hired like a comedy writer, like someone who didn't make it on SNL, to like make like quippy bits about whatever fucking Luann calling her a pedophile. I don't know, something like that.
What about that?
Oh, I can never forget. She's a pedophile. It's like, Lou. She's a way with words. We now move to episode 5 called The War Is On. And we start the show off with Tinsley and Dabney having a girls' night out. They said they're both kind of having a rough time. Tinsley because of the divorce and everything she's going through, and Dabney because she has to live with Jules. So they shut down La Perla, which I want to tell Deborah Denise, that is called shutting down a showroom. The two right. of them shut down La Perla on Madison Avenue and are prancing around drinking champagne in like $400 negligees. And I will say, like, La Perla, a couple years ago, I worked at Condé Nast, and we like had to get La Perla for something. And I remember like being on their website. I'm like, $212 for a thong that literally has like enough fabric to just, nothing is covered. I don't want to go into details of the anatomical parts of my body, but nothing would be covered for over $200. And so that is shutting down a showroom. That's how you shut down a showroom.
In your face, Deborah Denise.
In your face. So from there, they go back to the Empire Hotel and hang out in Dabney's room in their lingerie. They order room service, grilled cheese and chicken fingers and champagne, which is very bougie. I like the mix of high and low. Chicken fingers, grilled cheese with expensive champagne.
I wouldn't mind that right now, actually. That sounds like a super nice dinner.
I know. Yesterday, I was like, this whole week I've been eating really healthy, and then yesterday I was so tired and bored. I was like, I don't feel like cooking lunch. I don't want to do anything. So I ordered like a cheeseburger and fries, and I was like, this is so good. This is making me so happy. And then I went for like an hour-long walk after. I'm like, okay, that is not what your body needs, and didn't it ask for it, but we did not need this.
But I do have a query. Do you sit around in lingerie or underwear with your siblings?
Yes. I my two older brothers love hanging out with me when I'm wearing lingerie. Well, I thought it was weird that they both were wearing their sexiest, best little outfits. And then on Roni a couple seasons ago or whatever, where Tinsley's like, yeah, I've like made out with my sister. I was like, what?
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
It made me want to throw up when I like put two and two together. I was like, Megan, don't let these thoughts get into your head. This is dangerous territory.
Maybe it was that exact night. Maybe that's the night they practiced kissing on each other.
I like don't have a sister, so I don't understand that, but like, or like
you don't make out with your brother.
I don't make out with my brothers yet. We're still young. But I remember
not
like,
in Arkansas.
Yeah. I'm not Brittany fucking Cartwright. But I remember like growing up, like watching, I don't know, like watching TV or hearing other people talk, and they'd be like, yeah, like at my sleepovers, like me and my friends just like make out, so we like learned how to do it. Like, none of my friends asked me to make out when I was in seventh grade. No one was like, let's kiss and practice on each other. Like, and I remember feeling like weird. I was like, am I the freak or are they the freaks? Like, what's happening? Like, I just don't get it. I'm like, and also, like, you need to practice kissing. Don't you just like kiss and then do it? And the first kiss, you're like, huh? Like, that was not what I felt. Oh, kissing felt like. And I wasn't like one of those kids who like kiss their parents on the lips. I find that to be like a little weird. Like, after you're like out of diapers, I feel like there should be no kissing on the lips with the kid and the parent. But I'm not a parent, so I don't know. But that's besides the point. We've gotten to an incest hole, Jasper.
Well, the German bashing is over, and now it's the pedophile and incest bashing.
We have to go to something more American. Incest. Yeah.
God. Right, let's move on.
Yeah, anyways, moving on to one of actually my favorite scenes. Paul is at Peace Food Cafe by himself, and he's reading an article about himself about like fucking up the sconces in the wall, and like the waitress comes over to like drop off the coffee or something, and he's like, it's not like rock stars haven't broken things in hotel rooms. And like is talking to the waitress about it.
Hello?
The waitress is like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, he sits down and reads page 6 to the barista. He's like, yeah, the barista doesn't give a fuck. It looks like one of those paid friends.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely like, she was a Craigslist person where production was like, hey, we're going to have to give you a day rate and you're going to have to attempt to look at Paul and actually have a conversation with him. And she actually did such a great job acting like a disgruntled employee. I think she really nailed the gig.
and he has the worst laugh. I hate his laugh so much. I can't even do it, but it's like, it's so weird.
Yeah, he is just a little shit. Then he was saying that a blog called that a blog post called No wrote about how Tinsley's dress at the opera looked like a wedding cake, and they said it was more cake than fashion, which I really think is poetic and great way to describe her. He was very happy about that. Groundbreaking journalism on the blog. No.
I mean, yeah, of course he was happy about it, but like, imagine if she would have worn the monkey cape. What would they have written then?
Social suicide. Tinsley Mortimer slaughters monkey for jacket. So then we go to Jules at the hotel. She is on that couch, which is always danger zone when she's sitting on that couch, where she's very upset all the time. And she's like calling the front desk, can someone please come up here and clean the vomit on the floor and clean all the countertops? It's like, why is there vomit on the floor? You are an adult 27-year-old woman and you're not shamefully cleaning up your own vomit. People vomit. It happens. But you shamefully clean it up the next day. And that's that. And she literally says on the phone, I don't understand why you think I should clean it up about her own vomit. Like, it's not like she has a dog or a child. It has to be hers.
Yeah. It was Dabney.
Oh, yeah, well, you can totally see Dabney throwing up on a carpet. She's got...
Yeah, I mean, probably the night before was the lingerie night.
Oh, it could have been so, Tinsley's puke.
Chicken fingers and champagne doesn't go well together, maybe.
Doesn't sit right in my stomach. The maid ends up coming up and is just, like, so disgusted and creeped out. Then we see Jules going down to the spa, demanding that they find space for her to get a manicure. the spot is like, you know, Jules, we always try to make exceptions for you, but today, like, we're really booked, so we won't be able to accommodate you this time. And she's like, whatever, I guess I'll just, like, find a place that's better at doing everything. Just such an entitled ass.
You can see by the receptionist saying, like, we try to accommodate you every time. But, like, if the receptionist reacts like that, then clearly you have done a lot of shit to piss people off at the Empire.
I mean, it must be like the talk of the hotel, like how big of an asshole that girl is. Like, everyone on their lunch break is like, what did Jules do to you today? How right. did if you have been personally victimized by Jules Kirby, raise your hand.
And they probably only stayed at that hotel for a week. I mean, it looks like the film was shot within a week. It's only 8 episodes, 20 minutes.
And she gets customized sheets for, like, her 7-night stay.
Yeah. So in that short time period, she has done a lot of shit.
So then we get a scene where Paul and Tommy are hanging out to, quote-unquote, celebrate his victory against Jules Kirby. So he's taking his victory of paying back for the sconces as a victory towards Jules, because he thinks Jules called Guest of a Guest to tell them about this hot story. So he calls to order a bouquet of black roses for her. And the guy at the flower shop is like, is this a joke? And he's like, absolutely not. He said, quote, I felt like $1 million after my Page Six thing. You were shit on in Page Six. Like, this is, again, not a good look, Paul. I just need you to realize that. So he is on the phone with the flowers guys, and he says, please write on the card, thanks, bitch. I'm hotter than ever. XXX. PJC. And then we get the scene of Jules getting a knock, knock, knock on the door, and it's the guy downstairs delivering the flowers, and she goes, are you fucking kidding? When she sees him, and he goes, no. He gives her the flowers. She looks at the card, rips it up, and is like, I'm done filming. Rips off her microphone. And one little thing I really enjoyed was that the people at the flower shop capitalized bitch. Paul didn't specify the capitalization of bitch that we saw. So I liked that they took that as their own artistic way of printing this completely disrespectful card.
It's probably the flower shop at the Empire. So they were like, this is our payback.
Yeah. Fucking bitch. I would have thrown a fucking in there just to lay it on even thicker.
Yeah, she rips off her mic and is like, I'm done with filming and all that. And I'm like, why did she get so upset? Found that she knows the flowers and the card are from Paul. So why is she so upset or also surprised that it says bitch?
Yeah, and the fact that she's like ripping off the microphone and she's so upset about it is shocking, considering he's been to like 10 different events screaming at her, like, you burned your family's house down, you faked cancer, you know, you're an asshole. I genuinely tried to throw a glass in your face, like, and shatter the glass in your face, not just like get the liquid in your face. Like, I'm trying to hurt you actively. And she's like, but he sent me black roses. That's so disrespectful. He called me a bitch. Well, also, it could potentially be like he's like, I'm hotter than ever. And so she's like, wow, like me calling the press on him for a really like embarrassing discrepancy actually made him feel good about himself. So she might have been like, damn, did my plan actually backfire? Because this guy is so out of touch with reality that he's genuinely excited about being in the press for this. Okay, so we see Paul and Tommy going to an event at the Four Seasons. Devorah's also there. He says, I saw Devorah with that gross Crocodile Dundee hair and her big fake tits. They're talking. Devorah's obviously telling him, my dress is Maggie Norris. It's Maggie Norris. And he goes, I think she's my friend on Facebook.
I love that.
I want to see, like, is Maggie Norris still designing? Maggie Norris Couture. Oh, permanently closed. Damn. She's got a 3.7 review for working at her on Indeed.com. Let's see what her employees say. There is no room to grow. I didn't learn that much about the industry. There were so many interns working in a small office, and sometimes there'd be 5 interns doing office while the other interns would be sitting. Yeah, that sounded like me working at Stella McCartney. There was like literally 25 interns during one like college semester. And it's like, oh, 25 interns would actually equal 3 full-time positions. And rather than paying 3 full-time positions, they're like, let's just have these little slaves running all around Manhattan.
That's where Sonia Morgan got the idea from, having interns then.
And it's crazy because after working there, I got all of these emails on LinkedIn of people being like, oh, I'm actually starting like a class action lawsuit against this company and this company and this company because of unpaid internships, because they were like just horrific. And I was like, I'm not gonna do it, because I actually quit that internship with one of the rudest emails I've ever sent. I was like, this is an embarrassing company. Stella McCartney, you could suck my dick. Yeah, you make some really nice stuff, but like your management style, horrible. I had to make the director of communications his oatmeal every morning. Like, that was one of my jobs. I'm like, oh, so I'm putting hot water in oats. I don't need this. I don't need this. I can't do it. Fashion is so stupid. Don't get into it, kids. So we then see Devorah talking to a guy named Mike, who works at New York Magazine, which I'm very proud to say is my employer. And Devorah is telling them how rude Tinsley was to her. She goes, she is no longer my friend. And I'm on a mission to let people know she's no longer a Park Avenue princess. She lives in Chelsea.
Yeah, all the things like those reporters again that were like from Central Casting. I mean, as if anyone would go, "I, Deborah Denise, how are things with Tinsley?" Like, no, those people were paid by production to ask you how things are.
Yeah, they were most definitely plants. Anybody who's actively listening to this woman shit on Tinsley for no reason is a plant. Even though New York Magazine, in like their gossip column section that they used to have, would talk a lot about these people, and you can find a lot of the old episodes, all the old articles on New York Magazine's website now. But still, Deborah Denise, nobody is like running up to you with a microphone being like, can we have a statement on your fight with Tinsley, please? No, I don't think that's the journalism that they're trying to report on. She basically says she's dating a prince, but where is her crown? We are no longer speaking, and the war is on.
Do, do, do.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yawn.
Yeah, right? Tinsley's, like, doing her nails somewhere, like, has no idea that there's a war brewing at the Four Seasons event. So, from there, we go to one of my favorite scenes. You know I love when Jules gets taken down a notch. Jules is back at the hotel, the Empire Hotel, and she, I guess, has called downstairs, and a guy comes up, and she's like, excuse me, you need to fix this toxic smell in my bathroom. It's like, no, honey, that's probably you throwing up in miscellaneous places and forgetting.
You probably just have to flush the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all it takes. Oh my god. And then so from there, the hotel manager, Mark Houston, he got the full name, Chiron. Mark, I hope you're in therapy after this scene. He basically is like, ma'am, there has been some instances during your stay here. And like, he doesn't even get the sentence out, and she knows like exactly what's gonna happen, and she's like, don't do this on camera, please don't do this on camera. So then she like goes up to the camera guy, messes with his camera, looks at him and goes, are you retarded? Not saying that as like me saying that, Jules is saying it. And they bleep that out, thank god. And at least they have the decency to, I mean, they bleeped out the gibberish German when she was talking as Hitler too. Wow, thanks. Didn't bleep out the part where she's like, black people, who even cares? I should be able to say the n-word, whatever. Doesn't matter, they don't care. So she's being asked to leave the hotel. I'm like cringing for her. Like my body is just like curling up. I'm so uncomfortable. He's basically like, you need to get out of here. And at this point, she's sitting on the couch playing video games, which like Jules, like for whatever reason, that doesn't track for me. Like I couldn't imagine her being a gamer, but I guess there's a lot about Jules we don't know. she definitely didn't want this part filmed. She was asked to leave the hotel because someone supposedly got into a fight in the outside of the hotel and they think it was her. She's obviously saying she didn't do it. And she actually begins to blame Dabney for this fight that got her thrown out of the hotel, which is hilarious because she's been consistently horrific her entire stay. And so the fact that she's like, well, this one fight that maybe Dabney got into actually is the reason I'm getting kicked out. That's crazy. Dabney did it. Like, you can't take responsibility for any of your behavior. She's such an asshole. So yeah, so she runs into a cab and Dabney basically says like, I need to separate myself from her, which is probably for the best. And I think at every employee orientation at the Empire Hotel now, they have like a big photo of Jules Kirby. And they're like, if you see this woman, this is her old face. This is her new face.
It's a new face.
She's Gem Touchdown. If you see Gem Touchdown here, run. Run, call the cops immediately. There's no time for this girl to be hanging out here. There's no, she has no business in this hotel.
Yeah, it was a beautiful scene how she got escorted out and like in her track pants and sweatshirt and like just having her phone and cigarettes in the hand, not even luggage.
She didn't even take her custom pillows.
No, exactly.
And she's like, are you telling me I'm going to have to take these pillowcases off a pillow? I don't even know how to do that. That's crazy. I'm American. I don't touch pillows. Now we see Tommy and Paul out and about on the town. Tommy's like, I don't remember the last time I had butterflies for anyone.
good acting, Tommy.
5 out of 5 stars. Wow, God. So they're talking about how they were dating, and like Paul is like, yeah, people have been like asking if I've been a huge sex. I was, not for good things. It was really cool. It was really great. I love being in the press. So they're at this bar. I guess Tommy starts getting a little butthurt that Paul like keeps inviting all these people around them, and Paul is making it seem like he's like Leonardo DiCaprio at this nightclub. Like everybody wants to hang out with him. Paul won't even listen to Tommy. Tommy's like, can we go? And then this is where like Tommy's acting went from C+ to A+ acting. He gets like really upset and he starts crying, and like the two of them go outside and Paul's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I didn't even like rehearse this with you before. Like, what are you doing? And Tommy's like, can I ask you honestly? He's crying. Are you using me as arm candy? Am I just arm candy for you at fashion events? And Paul is like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? I don't get it. Like, he goes, I'm Paul Johnson Calderon. You think I'm using you? You're maybe using me. Where is there to climb when you're already at the top? I'm Paul Johnson Calderon.
It was such a cringe scene. And both of them are completely wasted.
Oh, like wasted. They're
drunker than drunk. I'm like, God, of course he's using you as an eye candy. And of course you're using him for his money. Like, a match made in heaven.
Right? It sounds like it's exactly what the two of you want, even though I do still think Tommy has Midwestern vibes, even though he is from New Jersey. But like, Paul was like, I've never seen someone cry. My brain, I cannot compute tears.
You should know that you're used when you were actually cast to play the arm candy.
Yeah, I think he probably had to agree to have like 2 scenes where he's crying, because I believe he cries in the park later in episode 8. He has 2 cries. I mean, he made his paycheck during the Bloomingdale's outing with his mom. I thought he really, really earned his keep. So from there, we see Tinsley getting off a train in Newport, Rhode Island, where we see Dale's summer residence. So chic. Like, doesn't even go to the Hamptons. Bypasses the Hamptons. Just goes to Newport. They arrive in Newport. It's really beautiful. Newport's like full of old, beautiful mansions. And they go to this place called the Marble House. And it's just like this gorgeous home. They're tarring the back halls. And Dale always will find a way to remind Tinsley about her failed divorce and her failures. There's a portrait of a woman named Alva Vanderbilt, who I guess was like a big socialite back in the day, and this was her old house, and I guess she went through like a really gnarly divorce, and everybody in the society knew her for this divorce, and her husband like destroyed most of her portraits, but there was one in this house, and Dale is like telling her this story, and so is like the tour guide. Like, the tour guide was prepped by Dale to like squash Tinsley's day, like to ruin her day.
Absolutely.
He was like, you might be interested in Alva's history, considering your similarities. It's like, let Tinsley live. She just is unhappy. Please. But again, Dale is like, ear-to-ear grin, so happy. She's like, did you hear that? Society ruined Alva. She never came back. That's going to be you. Poor Tinsley.
10 years later, yeah, Tinsley had to go on The Real Housewives.
Right, but now she's the coupon queen. So you know what? Maybe
she
one
finally
day
she got her crown.
Yeah, I do feel like Tinsley probably has like 7 to 8 diamond tiaras,
oh,
like
100%.
Thrown about in her house. Like, she doesn't even care about them. She's like, this tiara was for my coming out party. This one was my cotillion. This one was when I was 21. This one was for my first marriage. Tinsley, you don't even.
Oh, God, and they're all made by Garrow Sparrow.
Oh, yes. Or actually, wait. So this is some good tea that I find from the next scene. So we have Devorah getting ready to go to some gala. And she goes to this jewelry designer, Jeffrey Rackover's showroom. She's basically trying on all this jewelry. And it's like $2 million worth of jewelry. And he's like, you know, Devorah, with all of this jewels, you're going to have a security guard with you. And she's like, what? I am so famous and rich and high society. Like, thinks she's so cool. But as I was Googling Jeff Rackover, because I ended up Googling Jeff Rackover because I grew up with a girl whose last name was Rackover, and she was really loaded. And I was like, oh, I wonder if he is her father.
He's the heiress to Jeff Rackover.
He's basically the new Dominic Ivaca. Dominic Ivaca. He's the heir to Dominic Ivaca. So this Jeff Rackover guy has some tea. So back in 2016, Jeff had a quote-unquote fling with this guy named James. And this is so weird. So him and James were like hooking up. James is like 26. Jeff is like in his 50s. Jeff called this kid his son, quote-unquote. And James ended up like changing his last name to be Rackover. I don't know what that was. They had sex with each other. Everybody called him his son. I don't know. Very questionable. So James, who was 26 at the time, ended up like having friends come over. So James and Jeffrey lived in the same apartment complex. James was on the 4th floor. Jeffrey was on the 32nd. James once had like a bunch of friends over like after a night of partying and ended up bludgeoning a guy named Joseph Comunal, who was like also like a rich trust fund kid. And he killed him. And then Jeff like cleaned up the dead body with him, and then the two of them drove a car to New Jersey, tried to light the dead body on fire, and buried him in a shallow ditch.
No. Oh my God. I didn't know that.
It took this a turn.
Show is taking a really weird turn. 6 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's Jeff Rackover. And then, obviously, Page Six, gotta love him, was saying that he had a lot of A-list clients. Oprah Winfrey, Diana Ross, President Trump. Oh, former President Trump. Yay. So, not surprising that Trump and Jeffrey, another Jeffrey that Donald Trump is friends with, who's a disgraceful piece of shit. Oh, God, I love this country.
But then also, like, that whole, yeah, whatever gala or event Deborah Denise goes to is janky. It's the weirdest event ever. It's like, it looks like it's held in a hallway.
Yeah.
Just roped off from, like, the elevator. And her date is in a sweater and a cap. And she's like wearing jewelry for $2 million. Like, this is the weirdest event ever.
She has a security guard.
Of course, again,
her.
She speaks to like the reporters and everything and talks to play. I think like yet again, this is not a real event because we only get the real events and charity galas with Tinsley. This one is set up by production so Deborah Denise can go somewhere.
It reminded me of from the Real Housewives of DC, that Republican healthcare event where it was like in that fluorescently lit ballroom of a hotel where you're like, oh my God, they started preparing for this event 3 hours ago. Like, is that a solo cup in the background?
Exactly.
So yeah, Deborah Denise Trachtenberg is at this event. She's talking to the New York Magazine reporters and she's like, by the way, I'm wearing $2 million worth of jewelry and that guy over there is my security guard. As if like anybody gives a shit. Clearly she didn't see How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. That was a huge plot line in the story where she like went to the party, was wearing the jewelry and then left. And I digress. On a great rom-com. I watched it a couple weeks ago. But she ends up like talking to these two reporters and they were like, actually, I don't even know if these were reporters. I think these were just like, again, paid extras. And they were like, wait, Deborah, we saw you like in the magazine and it was crazy. And then they were like, I just pulled it up on my phone. And he's like, the guy starts like reading out the magazine to her. And she's like, yeah, I did say that about Tinsley. Yeah. And then she says, she should be scared of me because I'll do anything to take her down. You think you're going to take Tinsley down?
Right. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. It's like the dumbest storyline ever. Yeah, I mean, everyone around Deborah Denise is a casted, quote-unquote, reporter.
Yeah. Because I was trying to find one of the reporters, Mike V from New York Magazine, and I wasn't able to find him. And I'm like, didn't cover your tracks, Deborah. He couldn't lock that one in. Questionable. We finish up episode 5 with Tinsley talking with her mom in Newport. And it's funny because the two of them are having this conversation outside and you just like pan to the background of them and it's just like 30 mansions, like homes that look like the size of the White House, like big ass homes. And she's basically telling Dale, you know, like, I feel really insecure and lonely because of her divorce and how people have been treating her. And she's saying like, you know, I know that Topper isn't right for me and feels really upset that Dale is constantly taking his side. And then Dale kind of tries to say, well, I was trying to save you. You know, you've been on and off with this German prince while your husband has been upset and hurting. And Tinsley basically was saying like, you know, he wasn't able to be a good man for her for two weeks, which implies that he cheated on her after 2 weeks of being married.
Exactly. That's what I thought as well. That's,
yeah.
Like, he must have cheated on her right from the beginning.
It was horrible. And, like, it's not fair that, you know, Tinsley needs to feel this pressure from her mother, especially when, like, the mom is clearly taking his side. And we even see it, like, on Roni 10 years later, where she's, like, so impressed by his new wife's fashion line. I can't remember what her name is. What's her name?
Mortimer.
Yeah, no, she's what the hell's her name? I have like their New York Times wedding. Oh, Tabitha Simmons. Not related to Dandruff. And so, yeah, they're kind of having that little conversation. And Dale basically says, you know, she's really sorry. She loves her and she'll take her feelings into account and hopefully will let up a little bit and let Tinsley just deal with her divorce as a supportive mom, not as like the truly like one of the worst people ever. Like, I mean, I swear, like if my mom was at an event, the dinner where everyone was like holding up pictures of hot guys for Tinsley to potentially date, and she held up a picture of me and my ex-husband at our wedding. I don't think I could really move past that, but no. She was nice. She apologizes, and hopefully they are good. We see Dale sticking up for Tinsley a lot in later episodes, which is really good. But that brings us to the end of episode 5.
Thanks so much for catching up with me, Megan O'Donnell, on this episode of Bravo Happy Hour. Until next time, be sure to follow Bravo Happy Hour on all social media platforms and feel free to shoot me an email, bravohappyhourpod@gmail.com, with any hot, juicy gossip or just to say what's up. Stay tuned on Tuesdays and Fridays for more episodes of Bravo Happy Hour. And if you're loving the show, head on over to Apple Podcasts and give me some love in the form of a 5-star review. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of your day.